The people of God were living under an evil regime. The Roman Empire ruled them from afar, using fear and violence and the threat of violence and the power of rumor to control those whom it had beaten. Now, rumors were always spreading among the population about what would be the next atrocity to come down, what would be the next crackdown visited upon them. Violence reigned in the streets, with the powerful and the connected feeling quite at liberty, to simply attack anyone who opposed them. The people were looking for someone, anyone, to do something about it. They were looking for something, anything, that they could do to resist this force oppressing them. Now, people were beginning to pin their hopes on a man whose fame was spreading quickly through the land. A person whose fame was spreading from Galilee in the north down to Judea and Jerusalem in the south, over to the Decapolis Gentile territory on the other side of the Jordan River. His fame was spreading quickly. He was teaching people subversive ideas about a new kingdom that was coming, seemingly without fear. People hoped that he would show them what to do about this evil regime. And so it was that one day an enormous crowd gathered around Jesus. There were thousands of people, thousands, women and men and children, Jews as well as people from other nations. It was an ocean of humanity. More than the eye could take in, more than the mind could comprehend or count. So many that Jesus had to climb up to a high place so that he could be seen, shout over the crowd and the sounds of the wind just to be heard. The Sermon on the Mount. It was the beginning of Jesus' reputation as a seditionist and an agitator. It was the beginning of Jesus' collision course with those who ruled by violence and fear. The Sermon on the Mount was a manifest of what it meant to be a follower of Jesus. It was a handbook for nonviolent resistance to evil. It was a playbook for how to prevail against even the most vicious opponent. Jesus lays out an ethic, a method, a strategy for nonviolent resistance. Jesus teaches people of faith what they must do in order to prevail against evil. First, we must utterly forego vengeance and violence as strategies to resist evil. Second, we must be fearless and creative and shameless in publicly exposing evil for what it is. Third, we must always believe that our enemies are capable of transformation. Now, an important note. Jesus, I believe, here is talking about public life. He's talking about what it is that people should do in their public lives, not their conduct in their individual lives. These are not primarily to be understood as rules about how to behave when you're being mugged. Jesus is not here telling battered women that they must meekly submit to domestic violence. This is about public life. Jesus is teaching his followers about how they must behave if they are to resist evil and win. First, we must forego vengeance and violence. Now, Jesus lived in a time when politically motivated violence was commonplace. It was used as a way of controlling people. Violence and the threat of violence was used to keep people in line, to let them know what their place is, to keep them from speaking up or standing up to those who felt themselves better than others. Jesus said, "You have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evildoer, but if someone should strike you on the right cheek, turn the other also." Turn the other cheek. That is, even if someone should strike you in the face, do not strike back at them in anger. Do not return violence for violence. Instead, be courageous. Stand peaceably. If someone has struck you across the cheek, turn and show them the other cheek also. Present it for another blow. Show them that you will not stoop to violence as they have done, but neither will you allow their violence to silence you. In the face of violence and the threat of violence, to turn the other cheek is to reclaim power. It is to turn the other cheek is to declare that the evil that has been done to you, the evil that has been done to you is impotent to achieve its true aim, which is to control others. To turn the other cheek is to reclaim power from those who believe that violence is the way to achieve their ends. Now, the logic of violence seems like wisdom. The logic of violence is alluring. It seems like wisdom to say that a willingness to harm or even kill another person is a way of keeping yourself safe. It seems like wisdom. But violence spawns violence. That is all that it is capable of. It is like a virus. And it is foolishness to expect a virus to create anything other than more of itself. If we wish to resist evil and win, we must forgo violence, Jesus teaches. Second, we must be fearless and creative and shameless in publicly exposing evil for what it is. Now, Jesus lived in a time when the powerful, when the wealthy, felt as if they could behave with total impunity towards others, that they could enrich themselves on anyone, with anyone. They could do what they wished to anyone. They could act with total impunity, exploiting people all around without any means of public accountability. Jesus said, "If someone wants to sue you and take your coat, give them your cloak as well." Now, God's law forbids the practice of collecting on debts by taking even the clothes off of someone's back. This is against the law of Moses. Even a destitute person is afforded the dignity of clothing in God's law. So, if someone is trying to sue you and take the clothes off of your back, they are committing a grave evil. They are committing a grave evil. They are placing money above human dignity. Now, in that circumstance, Jesus says what you are to do is you are to highlight the evil they are doing. They are committing a grave evil, and you are to shame them for what they have done. Now, keep in mind, people only have two garments, a coat and a cloak. So when Jesus says, if someone tries to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well, he is saying, strip down to your socks. Take all of your clothing. Present it to the wrongdoer and say, does this satisfy your greed? Or is there yet still something else I must give you? To stand naked in the public square is to shame them for doing wrong. It is to expose the naked wickedness of their act. to shame them in public. Now, Jesus is saying that when someone commits evil, do not allow it to go unnoticed. Do not allow it to pass by as if it is simply normal behavior. Create a public spectacle. Evil acts must be challenged publicly, even when that strains the bonds of manners and decorum to the breaking point. Manners and decorum are good as far as they go, but they cannot be afforded more value than what is right. Third, we must believe that our enemies are capable of transformation. This is the hardest. Jesus said, "Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Love your enemies. Why should we? Those who have harmed us, why love them? They do not deserve it. If their behavior is unlovely, why should we love them? We love our enemies because we hope it will transform them. We love our enemies because we believe in the power that love has to transform people, to make them change their ways. We love someone who has committed evil because we hope for their sake that they will not go on abusing the dignity, their God-given dignity, by behaving in wicked ways, but instead should change for their own sake, as well as the world's. We love our enemies because we hope it will transform them. We hope it will make them change their ways. But why should we believe that this will do any good? Should we not instead trust in an evildoer to simply continue behaving as they always have? We believe that loving our enemies can transform them, because we have seen that the power of love does have power to transform lives. We have seen it. That is why we believe it. As followers of Jesus Christ, we have seen the power of love move people from paths of only death onto broad and wide and sunlit highways of life. God has transformed us. God has transformed me. There are people in this room who can tell you that this is true. Brad, does God have the power to turn a person from a path of death onto one of life? Testimony. Jim Crawford, have you seen the power of love go up against evil and win? Have you seen it? Testimony. We believe in the power of love to transform people's lives because we've seen it with our own eyes. We love our enemies because love is the fiercest power there is. Love is as strong as death. Its passion, fierce as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, a raging flame. Jesus tells us we are to love our enemies, because if we give up on loving them, then we have given up the most powerful tool that there is for transforming the world. We cannot give up on the power of love if we want to have any hope of winning. If we have any hope of going up against evil and winning, then we must have the power of love. Now make no mistake, beloved. Make no mistake, beloved. We are called in this time, today, in this country, in this city, in this church, Christ is calling us as from mountaintop heights. Christ is calling us to resist evil. There is jingoistic racism tearing apart families of immigrants. There is Islamophobia wrapping itself in the flag and declaring, I am here to keep you safe. Discrimination against women and LGBT people is being written into the law. It is being written in the name of our God and blessed by the church. The value of a dollar has never been higher, and the value of human health and thriving has never been lower. White supremacy. White supremacy, once enshrined in the Constitution, white supremacy has reared its ugly head and is looking to regain its former glory. We must stand up to it. We must resist it. Now make no mistake, beloved, none of this was inaugurated on January 20th. Not one thing was begun that day. These are old struggles. These are old struggles. Struggles that the elders of this church remember already having fought faithfully. These are struggles that we must be teaching our children how to fight as well, for it shall be theirs too. These are old struggles. But we today are still yet called to take up that struggle as our own. Christ has called us to do this. And Christ has given us the resources that we need. Christ has not left us bereft. It is not as if we have to come up with the means and methods by which to resist evil all on our own or invent them for the day. Rather, we have been given the handbook. Christ has given us the handbook that we need for nonviolent resistance to evil. And by the time that we are done with it, that handbook will be dog-eared from use and coffee-stained from late nights set up planning. Christ has told us what to do to stand up to evil and win. We must forego vengeance and violence because they are like viruses. They're elegant machinery designed only to replicate themselves. We will not commit violence or seek vengeance, but neither will we be cowed into accommodating evil. What evil desires most, more than anything in the world, what evil desires most is silence. To be given peace and quiet while tearing people's lives apart like tissue paper. We will not be silent in the face of evil. We will be fearless and creative and shameless in revealing evil for what it is and calling it by its name. And last, and most importantly, and most challengingly, we will remember that though we deplore evil, we do not hate people. We cannot hate people and have any hope of winning. We cannot hate people and have any hope of winning them over, of honoring their dignity and ours. We will love those who do wrong and behave as if we believe that God can transform their lives, turn them from enemy to ally, make them co-creators of the beloved reign of God. And we will have the audacity to believe that by standing up to those who commit evil, we might be nothing less than the very living body of Christ in the world today, calling people to new life, to a new world, to believe in the good news that people can change their ways. The way that the world is today is not how it must always be. The struggles of the past do not always have to be what we struggle against. New life and new possibilities are possible. We can live them ourselves and show the world. We can prove that there is a higher and holier calling. That by following the path of love, we might build the very kingdom of God. May we have